Before beginning, we are providing a trigger warning for this episode. Thank you. Welcome to the Bicast, a podcast for the bisexual community. November 20th is Transgender Day of Remembrance, a day to honor those ripped from our lives. We want to recognize those great strides by organizations to become more trans-inclusive and those individuals who continue to educate and bring a better understanding to the world on the issues of the trans community. This is a segment none of us want to be doing. It is a great thing to have a day of remembrance, but it is my feeling it should be every single day. Second. We should be working to show the world just how horrendous attacks and bigotry against our trans brothers and sisters is worldwide. This can't be tolerated anymore. Statistics help, but every statistic has a name. Give me a second, okay? And a story. They were someone's child, brother, sister, aunt, friend. And they are gone for only one reason, hate. We cannot stand by and allow this to continue. The trans community has a past, a present, and a future. With us to talk about our biggest future is one of our biggest trans warriors, Debbie Jackson. Welcome.
Hello. Good to be here.
I'm Lynette.
Yep. I'm John.
And I'm Allison.
And I'm Debbie Jackson.
Debbie, can you talk about yourself a little bit and one of our littlest heroes, your daughter?
Sure. My daughter is 7 years old now, and it's hard to believe how fast time goes. She transitioned when she was four, and when we look back at some of the signs that we weren't aware of as parents, we can see her gender nonconformity from when she was three. So, thankfully, we were able to allow her to transition at such a young age that now at seven, she has lived as her true self for just about half of her life. To introduce me, I am a wife and a mom of two beautiful kids. I'm happily married to my husband, Tom. And we were friends of the LGBT community, at least the LGB part. We didn't really know anything about transgender issues, but we've both had best friends that go back to high school and college who are gay. So we at least knew about the struggles and the discrimination and the hatred against part of the LGBT community. And then about 3 years ago, right now, this time of year, our daughter told us at Thanksgiving that she was really a girl on the inside. And she told us that in those exact direct words. So we're actually one of those lucky families that doesn't have years of ambiguity of trying to figure out what the behaviors mean and, you know, what's going on with our child. At the age of four, she was able to tell us directly who she was. And we knew that we needed to get some help and some guidance in making sure that we supported her to the best of our ability so that she could be a happy and healthy child. So after a couple of months of therapy through the holiday season and into January, we were able to speak with a gender therapist, get her diagnosed with, at the time, gender identity disorder, now just gender dysphoria, and start her social transition. So like I said, it's been about 3 years since she was able to become her authentic self, and she is a much happier, vibrant, outgoing, confident child since then.
To your the video you did, and it was a long process for you to rearrange your mindset on your daughter's gender identity, which I think every parent goes through. So if anybody's under the illusion, it was just like, okay, that's what she said, that's what she is. It wasn't like that at all.
No, yeah. Not at all. And that's one of the reasons that I have been trying to talk more and more about it. It really was a process, and that's why I try to say, too, the signs were there a lot sooner, and we just didn't know what they were. From starting to wear dresses, that was the most obvious one, but it even goes back before then, the way she would react when it was time for a haircut and wanting to wear pieces of jewelry because only the girls around her in her preschool class were wearing jewelry. So she wore jewelry, but it was kind of a boy piece of jewelry, a shark tooth necklace. So now we can look back and we can see the indications that were there. But even when she just started, you know, wearing dresses and identifying with girl characters on a cartoon or something, we thought, like probably most other parents think, we have a gay child, because mm-hmm. we are all aware of gay people around us. We have friends, we have coworkers, we have family members, but the transgender population is so small, or at least it's so hidden because of safety concerns, that we weren't aware of any transgender people to understand that that was even a possibility. So it really yeah. was many months of processing this.
Well, we really thank you for sharing your story, because there are other parents out there who, you know, may not have a child who can articulate as well at that age, and this will be very helpful for them to hear her story. So we applaud you for that.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad to share, and I just want other parents to realize that it's not something that they have to be afraid of.
Exactly. Exactly. And the more information, the better. The better we educate, the more the fear dissipates, and the child can grow up a lot healthier and happier.
Right.
I know that you must worry about her exposure to a lot of the not so great feedback, and that must be quite a challenge for you too. So
it is. It is. We have fears just like any other parent. You know, a child this age, we are, you know, afraid of, you know, you hear the kidnapping stories, and I know a lot of it's just overblown from media attention on it, but that's a fear that parents these days have. And, you know, I tend to have a recurring nightmare that someone takes my child, she goes missing in public, and the first thought I have is, you know, this predator took her thinking that they're getting a little girl with little girl's anatomy, and then when they get her somewhere alone and they discover that that's not the anatomy it has, that she has, that it's going to enrage them even more.
Yeah.
And I just wake up sobbing and sweating thinking about it. And, you know, most parents have this fear, and yet mine is compounded knowing that the hatred that's out there and the lack of understanding of someone whose body and mind doesn't connect. If you already have someone who's has that predatory mentality, it's just going to be that much worse if they discover it. So it is very scary. We try to hide her from some of the realities. She knows that some people might not want her as a friend, but for instance, we won't take her to the TDOR event tomorrow. We don't want her to realize just yet the level of violence that's out there towards people like her.
Yeah, that would be just a little too much for a little one like that.
Mm-hmm. Debbie, you know, first off, I just want to applaud you being in public and your efforts for your daughter. I know being trans that it is incredibly tough going through life without supportive parents.
Mm-hmm.
And first and foremost, congratulations and thank you for being the strong advocate that you are. And your daughter's very lucky. I feel so much empathy with your family and hope. It's the new generation, and you guys are really, you know, you're the pioneers in an area where many people don't know what to do. And I just applaud your efforts. It's really, truly outstanding.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Can I just interject? If we look back on the history of trans children being raised, this is a milestone, because there are a lot of adult trans individuals who suffered most of their life because they didn't have the proper kind of support when they were young.
Mm-hmm. And getting to know those people is what has led us to speak out as much as we have. You know, for the first couple of years, we were very quiet and we didn't want anyone to know. We just wanted her to be allowed to transition and kind of have a fresh start with a new set of friends and, you know, for our family's safety, not have any attention brought to us. But after losing all of our friends too, the people that we now associate with are in the LGBT community, and most of my best friends are now transgender women, and my husband works with trans men. And from getting to know them and hearing the stories that they tell of their childhood and their teenage years and how they felt when their bodies betrayed them through puberty and beyond, that's what spurred us to want to speak out. Like, we can't allow another generation of this sort of torture to happen. I mean, we just can't. We need people to know that it's not acceptable. There is medical help available. People don't have to go through that anymore.
And you've just started a new project, right? Is that?
Yes, I have a couple. I started a website for other parents of gender nonconforming kids, but that was right when we started getting a lot of attention, so I haven't really gone to build it up yet. But it's called Transparenting, and I'm about to start that as a nonprofit that will specifically help educate parents of gender nonconforming kids so that they know they're not alone and they have resources and things, someone they can reach out to in a community. But right now, since that hasn't really been developed, we put together a campaign that we're calling the Pride and Joy Campaign. And for the months of November and December, we're trying to raise money for the Trevor Project, because there were a couple of really horrible stories over the summer or into the early fall of a couple of kids that the abuse seemed to come from their families. One was an 8-year-old boy who no one knows if he would be gay or transgender because he didn't live long enough to be able to say or to find out who he was. He was 8 years old. He liked to play with dolls, and that alone was enough to make his mom and her boyfriend think that he was going to be gay. So they tortured him to death. And a week after that was in the news, there was a story of a trans boy who was 17 who stepped in front of a train and committed suicide. And in reading the obituary and the story about him, his own parents said that he had been saying he was a girl since the age of 4. So for 13 years, they knew, but they didn't support. And, you know, 13 years ago, there was not the information that we have now. So maybe it was a little too confusing and frightening for them. But in the last few years, as he became more insistent, as he picked his own name, as he asked people at his school to change pronouns, they still didn't get on board. And in the stories about his death, they continued to call him she and her and their daughter. And they dismissed the gender issues as having anything to do with the suicide and instead said that it was just because of a recent breakup with a girl. So that told us right there that parents are the ones who need to be informed first and foremost. We can get to other people later, but if you are your child's first bully, if you are your child's hero, you're a god to them at that age, and if they deny who you are, there is something wrong. They should be the people that you can always trust to support you no matter what. And then they should be the ones who are out fighting for you. So the Pride and Joy campaign is taking the idea of having pride in being part of the LGBT community, but also in realizing that that's what children are. They are pride and joy. At least they're supposed to be. And even if the idea of them being in the LGBT community scares you, there is something redeeming about them that you need to hang on to remember that you love them. So maybe it's their love of music. Maybe it's how witty they are at being able to come up with jokes. Maybe it's the compassion they show towards animals. There is something about your child that should remind you that they are your pride and joy. So the Pride and Joy campaign was started. You can go to prideandjoycampaign.com. You download a poster, and it says, "My kid is my pride and joy because," and you fill in the blank. And we really want parents of LGBT kids to do this. You don't have to out your child. You can just put the poster with the writing on it. You don't have to have a photo of your child. You don't have to have a photo of yourself. But we would like to get as many people as possible to say something positive about their LGBT kids and start getting that around. We'd love it to go viral. We want these pictures out there. We want as many people as possible to see that these kids do have true value. And then to take that next step and make a donation to the Trevor Project as well so that they can help prevent suicides like the one that happened with that boy.
Thank you. Sounds like a great campaign.
You know, I hear a lot of what I've seen in other kids who have gender identity issues. And even progressive parents sometimes don't listen to their kids, or they just think, oh, well, you know, this kid is gay or lesbian, and it'll all kind of come out as they grow older. And it really is hard for these children when their parents aren't listening to what they're telling them. I've seen it multiple times. And I think even here it's getting better, because I see younger children with various kinds of gender issues, gender dysphoria and gender identity issues, really being more listened to and accept it for who they are when they are. I think I've talked about this on the podcast before, but like at our pool, we have, you know, real clear bylaws on the front before you even go in, which includes all the non-discrimination. And we had an 8-year-old child who really dresses like a boy and pretty much behaves like a boy. And the child was in the women's shower one night, and a woman like confronted this child about being in the woman's showers. And it became a huge thing because people really like stood up to that. You know, this child is expressing their gender identity how they want. They're going to go into the girls' room and use those showers, and you're a bully. Was how it pretty much came out.
Awesome. Where
we actually talked about it, you know, like having a timeout for parents who commit these kinds of atrocities against our children.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the kind of thing that I think we need to start doing everywhere, as a, you know, John Q. Public is saying, you know, that's it, you don't get to do that. You know, I think that would help a whole lot with our problems. So we must honor those who came before us and acknowledging their work. And a loss at their passings, journalists talk about the past and those who are gone and not forgotten. And I'm talking specifically about Leslie today.
Yeah, I worked with Leslie a few times over the years. You know, I do all kinds of political work. And, you know, Z was Workers' World Party, so there would be conflicts over politics doing stuff. But I remember back when Stone Butch Blues came out, it was like in the early 90s, Leslie was putting out a perspective that we weren't hearing anywhere. I mean, we knew butch lesbian women. We knew trans women. There weren't many trans men out. And, you know, genderqueer was not a word that we even understood back in the early 90s. And Leslie came and wrote this book and really began to like break down a lot of the gender structures that we have lived with for so long, and a pioneer, really. I just think back of the times that I'd worked with her or worked around her. There's a lot of trans people who don't identify as Leslie did, but really gained a lot. One of the things I remember reading Stone Butch Blues years and years ago, and one of the things I felt was there's a universality in Leslie's message in the book. It doesn't matter if you're a trans man or a trans woman or any queer person or even a working class person who has to deal with all the kinds of crap that you have to deal with in the workplace because you're somehow different. It speaks to everybody. Leslie also was really working class and always kept that through their life. And, you know, I really am still in mourning for losing her.
I think it's important people understand just how valuable trans members of our community have been for us and will, and still continue to be. I mean, Stonewall wouldn't have happened, you know. And Laverne Cox, every time she goes anywhere, this is my understanding, she always brings up the violence and is always campaigning. And you know, I have to give her kudos for that. That's great.
Yeah, the other person you wanted me to talk about was Sylvia Rivera, who, in legend, threw the first shoe at Stonewall. You know, I first read about Sylvia in Stonewall, which was Martin Duberman's book on Stonewall, which looked at people that were around Stonewall who came from very, very different perspectives. And there's a lot about Sylvia which really resonated with me. I mean, first, Sylvia was not only trans, but also bisexual, was part of the post-Stonewall GLF, the Gay Liberation Front, and was early, you know, even after doing so much to make the revolution, was kicked out because she was trans. Going back earlier into her life, one of the things I thought was really remarkable was that, you know, she lived on the streets and as a kid, kicked out, lived on the streets, lived around Times Square, did tricks. And the most amazing thing I thought from that period for her was that it wasn't until she was imprisoned for being trans and doing sex work that she got hooked on heroin. And that says a lot about, like, how the prison system works or doesn't work. That, you know, here's a person who, like, has so much going on in her life and is really at a time when it was against the law to be queer in New York City, you know, getting to the, you know, staying straight in terms of drug use until, like, she's incarcerated. And that, you know, and that addiction, like, hampered her at various points in her life. But she was a revolutionary and another early revolutionary who really struggled, and no matter how many doors were closed, she would find a window to break into to keep the message going. And, you know, and really never had many resources in her life. I remember watching a documentary about her some years back, and, you know, this is in the 90s, and she's homeless, and she's actually helping homeless people in, you know, in her own situation, and really still struggling throughout her life.
I think that's kind of a common theme with people that are activists and in a time when it's not a popular way to be thinking. It's very easy to succumb to self-medication, you know, because it's, you don't, your support system is, you know, you don't get a lot of positive, and it's unfortunate. It's one of the, our tragedies.
You know, in Sylvia's case, it was the prison system that got her addicted to heroin, right? If she had had support in her life at a young age, and she was young, when I think she was maybe in her teens still when she first was incarcerated, if she had had any kind of support, she might have lived a much different, you know, life and hadn't gone through, you know, like we put people in prison to save them. In fact, it hurt her. But she's
yes.
there, and, you know, and she was always there, and she, you know, and I think Leslie is another person who was always there around all kinds of struggles that weren't just focused on LGBT issues.
Right.
Leslie was around Mumia work, and, you know, my partner did Mumia work for years, and, like, you know, Leslie was really active in talking and educating about political prisoners. And when there was a doctor murder in Buffalo, Leslie was on the line and doing clinic defense. So there's, and when wars, you know, the wars happened, and we might have been on various sides of how to do the anti-war work because she worked with Workers World. She was there, or, you know, in it.
Okay, so we talked about the future and we talked about the past. Let's talk about the present, the unwanted one, a subject I don't want to talk about, as I mentioned, because it is so painful and I feel so powerless to stop it. And that is exactly why we need to talk about it. We have to make it unacceptable to treat trans individuals so poorly. It has to be a global effort to stand up and say stop. Allison, our present, bleak, horrifying, and completely preventable. Let's hear the numbers. Every number is a story and a person.
Well, the numbers this year are difficult. I have to say, when the Trans Violence Tracking Portal compiled the numbers this year, I went through every story to validate it prior to publication. And I'm pretty conscientious about reading through the stories to make sure that our data is not only accurate, but we portray what happened to the individuals. And this year, we have 270 murders that were reported. I have, in the past 5 years of reading trans violence reports, I have never read a year as brutal as this year. The horrific, disgusting, gruesome murders on the level that we have this year are beyond the pale. We had a transgender woman in Australia dismembered and cooked in a pot by her husband. We had a 17-year-old child drugged behind a motorcycle for a mile and a half. We had a 16-year-old tied up, burned, and tortured to death. And some of these types of acts, we've seen one or two in a year. This year, we seem to have just a tremendous amount of even more gruesome deaths. We've also, this year, had a large number of teens murdered. And with Transgender Day of Remembrance, we do focus on the victims of murder. The TVTP, however, focuses for Trans Awareness Week on transgender violence as a whole. We look at the suicides, like Riley's, that Debbie was talking about earlier. Riley did not live very far from me, and that story, I actually know people who know the parents. Just devastating. The 77 initial reports we have of people getting beat up and cut up and beat down. The silicone murders. I mean, we just have a tremendous amount of violence that has been reported to us in the transgender community. There is a consistent, there's a consistent problem in that we're hard pressed to identify the root cause of the trans violence perpetrators' motives. The transphobia is so high, but we've been seeking for a long time, many of us, how do we minimize that? How do we limit it? And it's very difficult. It's very, very difficult. The other point you brought up, Lynette, is that every number is a story. And one of the stories that came out was about Raíssa Reyes out of Brazil. She was the president of the Association of Transgender Individuals down in Sao Paulo. And a wall collapsed on her that had been inadequately built and killed her. But the part of the story that people are not aware of was Raíssa had a lot of transgender youth living with her. They had been thrown out of their houses. You know, the parents had basically thrown them into the street. And one of those individuals was Adriana Aquino. At age 11, she transitioned and moved in with Raíssa. And on November 9th, after she had lost her home because the house had fallen down and killed her friend and her protector, Adriana was murdered. She was beaten and shot to death on the streets of Sao Paulo. And we hear more and more stories where the protectors of trans youth are either murdered and then others are murdered, or that the children are being just thrown into the streets. It's truly frightening. The sister of Adriana was just crushed, and the family's just crushed, and Adriana's gone. That's just one family and one statistic that, you know, came out this year, late in the year. More stories. I mean, you know, Riley and stepping out in front of the train. Devastating. Just purely devastating. It's not just one person's life that was devastated. It was the family's devastated. All the friends at the school are devastated. Multiple transgender youth here who looked up to Riley have felt that they can't continue. They've had enormous stress since Riley's gone. There's always more victims, especially after a suicide. We also had this year another suicide of an older trans woman. And she basically went on Facebook and said she can't handle it anymore. She can't handle the dysphoria. She can't handle, you know, she couldn't handle it. And ultimately what ended up happening was that she committed suicide. We do feel powerless. We do feel that, you know, as a trans person in the community, I feel it's so hard, you know, not only making it day by day, but putting up with the haters and making sure we try to stay safe. It is very, very, very difficult to do in the public eye. We're attacked by the TERFs, who are the radical attackers. We're attacked by just about everybody you can imagine walking down a mall. We have to be careful. We have to be conscientious about where we're standing and what we're doing, and or we can get severely hurt. A very dear friend of mine up in Canada, I think about two weeks ago, was walking home from downtown from a trans meeting, and she got jumped and beaten down. We always have to be vigilant. It's not that we should have to. It's simply a safety mechanism for all of us. So the present is sad right now. We only have also the reported murders. And I want to really emphasize this. These are only the ones we've found. This doesn't include all the ones that actually happened. We know, for example, that we only have 25 countries where we have actual data. That leaves a whole chunk of the world. So when we talk about 270 people, we're probably talking more like 1,000 or more. That would be my estimate based on what I know. Places like China, Saudi Arabia, Russia, we don't get reports out of these countries. We may get a glimpse, but we don't ever see it. So the present has been painful this year, but there are still a lot of us out here fighting for equality, fighting for the rights, being fantastic parents like Debbie, and things are changing. It's slow, but things are changing. And all we can do is hope and work towards a brighter future.
I want to talk a little bit about hate speech and how that creates violence. You know, there are three unsolved cases of murders against trans people in Baltimore City, and two of them have happened since there was a big media fight over our Fairness for All Marylanders Act, which protects trans individuals. And Neil Parrott, who is a delegate from way up in the northwestern part of our state, was in the media all the time trying to put a petition on the ballot. And days after that petition failed, there was a murder of a trans woman. And then a couple of weeks later, there was another murder of a trans woman. And, you know, I can't help but think that that hate speech contributed to these two murders. And the other thing is, you know, the other thing I'll say is stop and frisk in New York City. There's another, it's another issue that while most of the media portrayed it as just going after black and brown youth, when you look at the numbers, you find that trans women were hugely targeted, and that, you know, and that, you know, gay youth were hugely targeted. You know, women in New York who were trans and targeted in Stop and Frisk, it sometimes were arrested just by having condoms in their purse.
Yes.
Because the idea was that if she was carrying condoms, it meant that she was a sex worker, which meant that, you know, you had a probable cause to arrest her, which is just ridiculous.
You know, yeah, that's completely stupid. That's, you know, I carry a condom in my purse.
Yeah, I mean, we had the same thing happen in D.C. years ago. And, you know, because we have a really strong community, that got stopped pretty much. But, you know, even, you know, and we have violent, we say that it's been 3 years since we've had a murder here of a trans person. But we still have a lot of violence against trans people.
Well, you know, institutionalized violence as with the police, where that's acceptable behavior. And, you know, they said, I hear this a lot. People say this to trans people. Sticks and stones may break your bones, but words will never hurt you. Just, you know, develop a thick skin. I don't think they understand what it's like to be inundated day in and day out wherever you go with hateful, hurtful words. It tears you away. You cannot say words do not hurt people. They do. You know, they are powerful. Powerful.
And there's
weapons.
Also fighting, right? And fighting words are used to incite violence. And
yes.
The First Amendment does not protect fighting words. I'm not like the ACLU kind of like, you know, First Amendment all the time, because, you know, yelling fire in a crowded movie theater kind of speech is not protected speech. And when I watched Neil Parrott talking about the bathroom bill, and that's how it was portrayed by the antis, you know, I realized that there shouldn't have been any space for him to be able to speak his fighting words. Because
exactly.
They have ramifications. And, you know,
exactly.
I kind of not just blame him, but I blame the whole media for letting this happen, so that, you know, it makes people who are unbalanced go off and kill people.
Yeah. And so we're talking about social responsibility, which is something that we have to, as individuals in a community globally, start doing. And I think, I mean, you know, I hear these horrible stories of women being beat up in the subway and people standing around with their cameras on and not intervening. And I know there's a danger, but if you got 20 people and two two guys are beating a woman up, and there's 20 people standing around. What are the odds here? You know, that's 20 people that could be stopping this as a group.
Yeah, well, you know? I mean, on our, you know, my own Green Line, we had a case where a trans teen was attacked in our metro. Actually, on my line between my station and the next station. And not only did her friends come into it, you know, like, carrying mace is not a bad idea because mace stopped the attack. She was stabbed by this predator. And not only that, was people used the system in Metro to do the Metro 911. He didn't get out of the station because everybody was put into motion at that point. And that really is how you stop this kind of stuff. I mean, it's horrible. Yeah. She got stabbed, but people have to stand up. And in this case, everybody did. It happened at rush hour, and, you know, that public riding metro really, and not just the public riding metro, but our metro police all dealt with it very quickly.
And it, you know, and it's not just about like a physical violence situation. Just when you hear people talking like that, hate speech or whatever, you know, you need to say no. No, you don't get to do that. You know?
One of the things that we tend to focus on is a U.S.-based, you know, response. The TTOR is an international event, and this is the response in each individual country has to be crafted in a way that meets the requirements of that country. And it's quite a bit of work to determine international goals for how do you help out there internationally. The U.S., we've got lots of problems where it comes down to the trans community. But in reality, there are other countries that are even 10 times worse or 100 times worse. There's so much violence and hate in other countries. I mean, people can't even come out. In one country, I'm aware that transgender individuals are subjected to going to the same clinic as pedophiles and classified as mentally ill to get hormone treatments, and that they cannot go to any other doctor but that hospital. So there's a lot of international work that needs to be done, as well as, you know, in the United States. And we've had 14 murders this year of U.S. women, trans women specifically. But the international role, we're much bigger in our needs in our community than the United States.
Yeah, but, and I'll just say that some countries have a different respect, have more respect for trans people than they do for the LGB communities. You know, I look at India and having, like, in some ways they're ahead in terms of trans rights, and they're really behind in gay, lesbian, and bisexual rights.
I don't know, John. We had a trans woman thrown from a moving train in India this year. I don't know that we're that much farther ahead in any country. We might be. From what I've seen, I don't know.
I was just reading this morning an article about the Muslim faith and transgender people by a trans man, and he was saying that there are several countries where there was a fatwa to make sure that trans people are able to actually get the hormones or even surgeries to transition. And yet in those same countries, you will be, you know, stoned to death if you're gay. So I think that might be one of the things you're talking about. Like, they think the lack of continuity between gender identity and body is something that can be fixed, and yet homosexuality can't be. So maybe they're supportive of transition, but not the lifestyle, you know, in air quotes.
Yeah. Right. And the country that I think you're speaking about, Debbie, is Iran specifically. it's the one country where gender surgeries are fully legal and encouraged. And I would certainly say there's a significant disparity between gay rights, which are completely illegal in Iran, being gay on any level, and being transgender. They feel that there is a medical solution, and that's what they do. Mm-hmm. So that I think you're speaking to the Iran policies, which are, considering Iran, I find it almost ironic that they have some of the best coverage.
I know. So, I thought the same thing. I think there were three countries it listed in the article, but yes, Iran was the one that led the way on it.
Oh, cool.
Well, it goes back to your gender doesn't denote your sexual attraction. So, being transgender does not necessarily mean that you're homosexual. So I think that's probably why they can deal with that. I don't know. And you're right, maybe because they think they can fix it. I don't know. It is amazing that's the country.
Right. It's not really logical, but I guess I can understand. I don't know.
Logic is not a human trait.
That's true.
Our logic is an illusion.
Yes. You know, one of the things that we have not announced, which has just come out today, is that the Trans Violence Tracking Portal has now been brought under the umbrella of the Transgender Human Rights Institute. So we now have a 501c3 that the TVTP will be under, and that was announced today. And the mission of the TVTP hasn't changed, but we've changed the scope to be an international transgender human rights institute for all rights for all transgender people all across the world. So that's...
Congratulations. That's great.
Thank you.
Congratulations. I saw that announcement this morning. I was hoping to get more info. It's very exciting.
We're absolutely thrilled out of our heads about it. It's we've started crafting policy, and we're going to take the mission out internationally concerning violence, concerning harassment, equality. We got a great board who's super excited and working hard to build an organization to reach out there and start partnering with everybody to bring about some international attention and education and awareness building. So we're excited. We're very excited. I would love to have some partnerships and
mm-hmm.
Stop the violence. I mean, that's really the mission that a lot of us
about.
Have. It's
that is what it's about.
Raise awareness, stop the murders, get parents more involved, get them aware. You know, these are the missions, and it's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work.
But something, we're making progress. I know. 5 years ago, 6 years ago, the word transgender, you couldn't get it in a publication anywhere in a local paper. Today, if I put out, we put out the press release today, and local papers are, fine. They're printing it right away. But we could not even get the word transgender put in a local paper virtually in five counties. So things are changing.
Awesome.
So I think, I kind of going back to my point earlier was that, trans and intersex people have been around since the beginning of time. And, different religions and faiths, have a better understanding than our modern society. And I think some of it is going back and like different cultures, while kind of Western ideas of orientation are problematic to them. The idea that people are born how they are and they have a right and freedom and blessing to live their lives is also important. And I think that is a message that for TDOR needs to be really put out again, that people who are trans have special ideas and are blessed in ways. And, to commit violence is not sacred.
they're valuable to us. And a lot of cultures, they learned that a long, long time ago. And there was a niche for that. You know, there was a place. There was, everybody had a position and a job. And it was just part of, it was just part of everyday life. And, you know, like you said, committing a crime against it, that's, you know, that's sacrilegious.
I see it in among Indian communities, American Indian, Indian, you know, the idea of two-spirit. And, you know, Harry Hay, one of the early, back in the homophile days, the early, some of the early works of Harry Hay were talking about, you know, sacred spirituality of Native Americans and the two-spirit. And how two-spirit people were really seen as authorities and teachers to the communities.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. So anybody have anything else they'd like to add right now?
I just think there's such a tremendous opportunity at this point to really save lives and do the work. I think Debbie's work is absolutely fantastic. I wish you were around when I was a kid, Debbie. I absolutely, you know, I don't know what happens in your house as a parent, but it certainly had to be better than what I put up with.
but, well, thank you. I was just reading a study out of the UK that said that I think 48% of trans people under the age of 25 or 26 had attempted suicide. And that number just, it can't stand. It just can't. So that's, again, why we started the Pride and Joy campaign. That's why we're trying to raise money for the Trevor Project. There is no reason for people who are that young to feel that they have no other option, because there are options. And we want them to know that they have value and worth, and we want to celebrate their lives. We don't want to continue going to funerals and celebrate the shortness of their lives. We want to celebrate what they can contribute, their entire long, prosperous lives.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, and going back to our past, you know, we have people who were real giants who did so much for not just trans people, but for the entire LGBT community and for everybody. And these are the people that we lose when we lose these people so young, and we can't keep letting that happen. And we have to speak out. We always have to be aware of what's going on around us, and, you know, be like those people on the train in DC, and, you know, when there's violence, make sure that that person is caught quickly, and that the person who has had the violence committed against them is all right.
And safe. And then I'll just close with my thoughts on the present. And this is from Dory Schiesinger, and she's on WordPress, and it's just a little thing that she wrote. And she says, "I am so angry about Transgender Day of Remembrance. I'm angry that most well-known trans holiday is about our sisters being murdered. I'm angry that 99% of our murdered are women, majority women of color. I'm angry that every year our list of names does not get shorter. I'm angry that our deaths are frequently uninvestigated and unsolved. I'm angry there are children on our list every year. I am angry more people are concerned about gay marriage than trans women being murdered. I'm angry this holiday even exists."
Wow. That's, yes, it's so true. Okay, so all links will be provided on the website.
And Debbie, did you want to just do a quick plug on your website or a donation information?
Sure. Again, prideandjoycampaign.com, and we would love if you would participate and make a photo so that we can spread that around social media. But, you know, the really important part is making that donation through prideandjoycampaign.com to the Trevor Project.
And Allison, we can always donate to the TVPT, right?
Yes, the Transgender Human Rights Institute is a 501c3, and all deductions are tax deductible, and they go to fund the projects of equality for trans people. So our website is, we cheated. We put tvtpnow.com to make it shorter.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll probably buy another 30 domains the way things are going.
Awesome.
Yeah, but always helpful to donate. Please donate to Debbie's project. Trevor is a fantastic project. And please give as much as you can to the community.
And I will say that Transgender Day of Remembrance, there are services all over the country and all over the world. So attend and listen to people's stories.
Yeah, make them real in your minds, people, because they are real people. I'll just plug ourselves. We could always use a little donation now and then, too, so we can keep going. And that's on our website. But more important, donate to Debbie and to the TVPT first, or TVPT now. La la la.
You know, we specifically made that difficult to say so people would have to think how to say it twice, you know.
Exactly. Well, it's very psychologically good.
There you go.
Remember, everyone, you are not wrong. You are not broken, and you are not alone. You are a human being, and you are transgender. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you, everyone, for getting through that.
Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, it's hard.
It's a hard one.
It's hard on Thursday to think about, like, what we've lost. And, you know, I remember people, not just Leslie, but other people who were murdered. I'm just so psyched about all the work that you're doing, and it's so useful, and it's so necessary, because I have parents in my own community that need you to be out there.
Well, thank you. It was definitely scary, but the more we speak out, the more support we get. The Brazilian show that where they came and filmed us over the Halloween weekend just aired last night. So today, my Facebook messages from people in Brazil and from Twitter and stuff are just going crazy. So it's definitely, you know, trying to make a global impact. When you see so many of the people on the list from TDOR that are in Brazil, including that 8-year-old and the story that you told about the wall and the other kids that were there, we really thought it was important to be able to speak out there. And, you know, it's one of those things. I just want to do more. I want to do more. I can't say no to anything.
Yeah.
And so much to be done that it's hard to, you know, pull back and not get out there and try to build that platform. So,
you know, though, you got to recruit people, Debbie. You got to recruit people. And part of being leadership in the trans community is passing off and delegating down. It's like the TDOR. I had 45 invitations to TDOR this year, and I went to one.
I bet.
I only went to one.
Yeah.
And I suggested dozens of people go out there and talk.
Mm-hmm.
Our stories are important, but if we're dead, then we can't get anything done.
Yeah, so, I wish I could convince more people. There are only two other people in our whole community that I've ever been able to get to go to other speaking things. And it ends up being the three of us who are always out there. And we have so many of these friends who are like, thank you for talking. And we said, you need to be a voice too. And some of these places, it's a very small group. It's protected. You're not going to be outed to the world. You need to get out there and tell your story too and be another voice, because they really, unless they see more of us, they're not going to realize the size of the community and the bond and have those stories become personal to them. But there's such a fear. And yeah. I don't know how to get beyond that, but we struggle with that here. We have a large trans community, but there are really only, you know, 4, 5, 6 people who are out in the public being vocal.
Well, it has to become more normalized. Mm-hmm. And I think once the junkie public, as I said before, quits being so afraid, it'll be safer. And when it's safer, then people can speak up, and it's a snowball effect.
Yeah.
So those of us who are safe, you know,
keep doing it. I kind of see it in Maryland how, God, for years, it was so hard to talk trans issues. And I will say there were a couple things. CB was one of them. And, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
She was very much, I mean, I got, you know, I mean, it's funny. I think it was like 2007 when she came after me. And, you know, it's a couple things because, like, in 2007, all she had to do was tell people that I was bisexual in the gay and lesbian community, and that was enough to get me on people's bad lists.
Oh yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
That's not as easy anymore. But when the trans bill came up this year, it was a lot of support, and you know, a lot of allies came and, like, we're really in support of this law. And, you know, I think that a lot of it has to do with the fact that there were just a few people who were speaking up, and that allowed people to not be afraid anymore and to speak up. And I think that's what we always have to do. We have to see those people who are speaking up, and we have to, like, spot them and be the next speaker in line.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, GIW hasn't published me in like 3 weeks. I'm like, you know, totally, it's like,
well,
what are they doing
now? What are you doing wrong?
they know that it would be like so unclassy to do this during.
Right. They have ethics.
Seriously
have ethics over there? You got to be kidding me.
I just keep
chuckling that, you know, I'm one of their favorite people in life. So anyway.
But Debbie, I want to invite you back anytime you need to talk about anything, promote anything, do anything, or anybody that you think we need to have on. Just let us know.
Yep.
And okay. We'll do it.
Wonderful.
Okay?
Thank you.
We have an open door.
Thank you.
And Debbie, next time you're in D.C., give us a little heads up and I can get some meetings set up with local people.
Okay, that would be great. Yeah, that was such a whirlwind trip. Basically, my tourist exploits were seeing the two different airports I flew in and out of. So,
yeah, exactly.
It was a whirlwind, but I would definitely love to get there and do more in that arena. So
there's a lot to happen, and a lot can happen in D.C.
Yeah.
So.
Well, thank you all.
Well, it was great to all see right. the T-flag like in that national meeting, like, opened itself up after all these years. And it's,
yeah.
And the reality is PFLAG's always been, in a lot of ways, inclusive organization, but it was great to see that they're really working on showing that they're inclusive.
Yeah.
But yeah, they were already talking the talk.
Yeah.
I mean, they were already walking the walk, and now they're talking the talk. Kind of opposite.
They didn't get the recognition for it.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's why I'm glad to be out there as a voice for them, to really let people know they're the real deal. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
All right, darling. Thank you so much. I'm going to hang up on you.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Bye. The views expressed on the Bicast do not necessarily represent those of Binet USA or the Bicast crew.